On the Fly with Jaymon G, roving the grounds of Oshkosh, covering air venture A to Z. In Warbirds, in ultralights, down on the farm, at the museum and Pioneer Airport, at the seaplane base, over at the Vintage Red Barn, at the EAA Air Academy, at the Aviation Learning Center, at Lightsport. On the Fly is on the air. And now, your host, Jaymon G.
Good afternoon and welcome to AirVenture Oshkosh 2009. I'm Jaymon G and we are on the fly. Thanks for joining us today. We have a little variety of things for you this opening day of AirVenture. We'll zip around a little bit. We'll start out with talking to some folks which we met at Broadhead, Wisconsin, the prelude to AirVenture and the Pete and Paul fly out up here yesterday afternoon. And we'll also talk to an aviation author named Eric Preston, who has a little overview of some of the interesting vintage stuff arriving at AirVenture this year. We'll talk to Sarah Wilson from the American Barnstormers Tour. They have a representation of aircraft for their 2010 tour down near the Vintage Red Barn today. And we will also visit with Jack Tiffany and his son Nick and Andrew King, all with the Pitcairn Auto Gyro Project, that PA-18 Auto Gyro sitting down in front of the Vintage Red Barn, one of the features of AirVenture this year. So let's roll on the fly. So I'm sitting here with Eric Preston, and Eric is a renowned aviation author. And Eric, you brought a very cool airplane to Oshkosh this year. Tell us about it.
It's Rob Bosley Aerodrome Airplane's replica of a 1909 Blériot 11, and we, my wife and my 11 and 12-year-old sons and myself reported to Aerodrome Airplane's factory in Holden, Missouri on June 14th and made the first part, and 26 days later we had an airworthy airplane, Rotec radial-powered full-scale wing warp Blériot 11. It's in the Rotec booth down in the display area.
Very cool. And you built that airplane in how many days?
It was a 29-day period of time, 26 work days during that period of time, 16-hour days. But Rob is a hard worker.
You say replica. Tell us the difference between that and the original 1909 Blériot.
Well, the biggest difference in this case is the materials that it's built from. The 1909 Blériot was all wood and natural fiber fabrics, cotton or Irish linen. And the I wouldn't even say that for sure, but it was a natural fiber fabric. This airplane is all made out of 60-61 T6 aluminum tubing, gusset built, and covered with modern Stitz process materials. And it's powered by a modern Rotec 7-cylinder engine. So.
Tell us about the engine. Maybe a lot of people won't know what a Rotec is.
Rotec is an Australian company, and I'm not a real knowledgeable person on the subject, but they build two engines. They build an R2800, which is the one that I've got, which is 110 horsepower, 7-cylinder, air-cooled. It's got a reduction drive in it, a planetary reduction unit, like some of the bigger Pratt & Whitney engines. And it's electronic ignition on one side and a standard magneto on the other. And then they build a 150-horse version of the same engine. And they're being used really pretty heavily in replica vintage airplanes. Aerodrome airplanes that I'm associated with, they've got a Newport 17 full-scale, one of the Flyboys movie airplanes that's been converted to the Rotec. They've got two Newport 28s flying with the Rotec. Just completed and as yet to fly, Sopwith Pup. I believe Rob's done a Fokker triplane with a Rotec, but I'm not positive of that. And then this is the second Blériot that has been Rotec powered. And the most interesting thing about that is yesterday was July 25th, which is the 100th anniversary of Louis Blériot's crossing of the English Channel. And he was the first person ever to fly across the English Channel in a fixed-wing aircraft. And it was a Blériot 11, just like this one here. And Rob has built two full-scale ones now, and the other one flew across the English Channel yesterday as a 100-year reenactment.
Oh, no kidding.
So this is the sister ship to that airplane. And then Rob built a scaled-down Blériot 11 several years ago for a gentleman in Wisconsin, and I flew that airplane last year in a Hilary Swank Richard Gere movie called Amelia that comes out on October 23rd. So
Eric, you worked on the movie Amelia last year, huh?
Yeah, we did just a couple of days' work, about 5 days' worth of trip up to Toronto, And I went up there with Rob's company, Aerodrome Airplanes, and I flew the scaled-down Blériot 11. And then Harvey Cleveland flew Dick and Sharon Stark's Marine Saulnier Parasol. And Dick and Sharon, actually, Dick writes for Kit Planes magazine, so he's pretty well known. And they just finished at a Havilland DH-2 in Rob's factory down there that is going to be on display this week. But Amelia was an interesting project. There was a lot of EAA people involved in it. The Tiger Boys from up in Ontario, Canada, were using a couple of their airplanes. And Jimmy Leeward, who's a big member, you know, on the board of directors, I believe, for the EAA, he flew Greg Herrick's Ford Trimotor in the movie. And it was a pretty big project. It stars Hilary Swank and Richard Gere. And it's the basically the life story of Amelia Earhart.
Who does Richard Gere play?
I believe he plays George Putnam, her wife, or her husband. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that fits.
I've seen the trailer is out now on the computer. You can look up, I believe it's something like ameliamovie.com, but you'll find it. It's not hard to find. And there's a good trailer on it. Hilary Swank, just it's amazing the similarities. Once they cut her hair the way Amelia had her hair cut and the clothes that she wears, she's a very, very close likeness. It's really impressive.
And what's the pretext of the film?
Well, I read part of the script that I was involved in and never really got around to reading the whole script, but I believe what it basically comes down to is the movie starts with they've left Le New Guinea on the last leg of the trip, and she's kind of just thinking back, it's similar to the Jimmy Stewart movie about Lindbergh, thinking back about her career and different phases of her lifespan, and you know, and then at the end of the movie, she disappears, of course. But it just covers her memories of the kind of flashback type movie of her life story.
What was the most interesting thing on the film?
Well, the most interesting thing to me, I unfortunately wasn't involved in at all. They built some incredible mock-ups for this movie. They built a full-scale Fokker trimotor on floats, and they took it up to Nova Scotia. She was the first female to cross the Atlantic in an airplane. She was a passenger on the trip, but it was a Fokker trimotor. I believe it was called the Friendship, and it was painted down the side of the airplane. And they built this full-scale trimotor on floats, took it up to Nova Scotia, and filmed all these scenes with the airplane up there. And then they also built a full-scale Lockheed Vega replica, and non-flyable, but used it for the movie. And when we got up there to film our section of Amelia, we went down to the movie studios and went through wardrobe and all that, and they walked us through the shops, and they had just taken the airplanes, but the pictures were hanging all over the walls, and there were all the molds for the fiberglass wheel pants and cowlings and stuff they'd built. And then we went and looked at the cockpit mock-ups that were in the sound stages, and they're all full-scale fuselage of the Lockheed Electra, the Vega, and the Friendship trimotor. And it was very impressive. It's a pretty large budget movie.
And so anything exciting happened during the flying scenes?
Well, it really worked out well for us. We were able to fly the Blériot almost 3 hours. I think I flew 2.9 hours the day that we did the main amount of the flying that we did. And the wind very steadily picked up. And by about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it got to where the Blériot just wasn't safe to fly in that kind of conditions. And the Marine, which has much higher tolerance of winds, Harvey was able to fly pretty much until dark. So we did the first half of the day with the Blériot and the second half of the day with the Marine, and got pretty much all of the flying that we needed done all in one day. So, you know, the setup, tear down, and wardrobe and all that stuff took 2 days on either side of that, but it was a really neat project and went really smoothly and really well.
Very cool. And that comes out in October. Who else did you mentioned some people that did the flying with you earlier. Anybody else have any mishaps or anything exciting happen on the film? You know, sometimes movie work can be kind of dangerous.
Yeah, they tend to tear up airplanes on movies. I didn't hear any kind of problem with that. They had a safety officer that was working there who I believe was an ex-Canadian snowbird, and he came in and had a briefing with us the day before. Very professional, very serious about safety. Any issues that we had, I had a gentleman that was standing in an area I didn't want him to stand in, and I flagged the guy, the safety coordinator, and he took care of it instantly. He was very professional, and I think that had a lot to do with the real smooth operation of the whole thing. I didn't hear of any negative incidents whatsoever. So it went down without a hitch as far as I'm aware of.
Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing the film. Now, were you in any character or do they replace you with digitally or something?
Well, they put me through full wardrobe all the way down to my shoes. And we did, you know, in the Blériot, your whole upper body sits out on top of the airplane. Your left or right arm is on, or sorry, my Blériot's right arm. This Blériot's left arm sits on top of the wing. So I was wearing a set of gauntlet gloves and a duster and really nice set of helmet and goggles. I could not believe they must have had $20,000 worth of helmets and goggles in this chest that they were using. They had collected up from all these different wardrobe houses around North America, everything they needed. They had thousands of pictures on the walls of pilots in different uniforms and dated to different dates. And when I walked in there, they knew a heck of a lot more about it than I did and were very current on the subject. So, yeah, I'd like to think that they won't digitize all of us out, but they certainly went to a lot of effort to run us through hair and makeup and run us through wardrobe, so we'll see how. There's a good chance it'll end up on the cutting room floor, though, so who knows?
Yeah, you never know. But now, Hillary Swank, did she actually get to fly an airplane?
I believe she went flying with one of the guys. They did a scene where they were doing a flying circus. I was not involved in this. It was done before I went up there, and they used mostly Canadian-based vintage airplanes. And I believe she did go flying with somebody in one of the airplanes, but I actually was on second unit the entire time, so I never saw Hillary Swank or Richard Gere. She was in one of the cockpit mock-ups while I was there filming a scene, but I didn't ever cross paths with her.
Oh, sounds interesting, that movie work.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's the first time I've ever been in front of the camera, but I did a lot of the flight test work with another guy, Harvey Cleveland, the same guy that flew in this movie, on Rob's four Newport 17s. He built four full-scale Newport 17s for Flyboys, and he built them all in 52 days. And so we did the flight test work in Kansas City and then crated them up, went over to RAF Halton in England and assembled the airplanes and got them through the CAA paperwork over there and then did briefings for the pilots and got everybody up to speed. And that was all on the movie set of Flyboys. And then Andrew King, who I've mentioned before, he actually was over there with one of Kermit Weeks' Newport 17s, and he did the flying in front, was one of the several guys who did the flying in front of the cameras. The Amelia one was the first time I'd ever flown in front of the cameras.
And you're also somewhat in the know as to what else is going on at AirVenture this year. Tell us some of the little behind-the-scenes tidbits that our listeners might like to know about here at Oshkosh.
Well, I'm the author of the Vintage Flyer series of books on vintage airplanes, so I'm kind of a fanatic about unusual vintage types and things that I haven't seen before. And I've heard a lot of rumors and interesting things. There's supposed to be an Art Chester Jeep Racer that's going to be there this year. I don't think it's flown yet, but I believe it's complete Monasco-powered. The Pitcairn Auto Gyro that Andrew King is flying is here and has been awaited for a long time. They're supposed to be the Lysander from Canadian Warplane Heritage, making its first appearance at Oshkosh. Let's see what else there's. John Thomason has his cabin Waco, a YKS-6, I believe, out on floats out at the seaplane base. Jason Petrolgia has brought a 1918 Mach-E M5 Italian World War I flying boat fighter. It's going to be on display on the field. I've been doing the test flight work on that for a couple years. Mm. And it's this exquisite airplane, and Jason is an incredible guy to talk to. It's a great story about how long he's been building this airplane. There's going to be quite a few interesting airplanes. Oh, and Roy Fox is coming from Australia. He's bringing a Clem 25. I don't believe there's ever been a Clem 25 at Oshkosh. And he has the only inline, Gypsy Major in this case, powered Comper Swift. And they're bringing both airplanes up to Oshkosh this year for that, too.
So. Oh, no kidding. How are they getting they bring it over in a container? And
I actually don't know how they got them over. I've just been hearing the rumors that I heard rumors they were coming, and I've now heard rumors that they have arrived, so I don't know what transportation system they used.
Also, we saw a comet today.
Yeah, that's Robin Reed, and he lives in California, in Northern California, but the airplane belongs to Tom Wath and is based at Flaybob, which is where Chapter 1 of the EA is based. And that's a Bill Turner airplane, and there were many racers built there at Flaybob through Chapter 1 by Bill Turner over the years. And the de Havilland DH-88 Comet, that's the airplane. It's a replica of the airplane that won the 1934 McRobertson race from London to, I believe, Sydney, but I might not be right about the Australian city, but in Australia. And one of the truly interesting long-distance early races. And this replica has been flying for quite a while, but it's been a while since it's been to Oshkosh, and it arrived yesterday afternoon, so it's here.
Now, Eric, I'm a big fan of your books, and I know you'll be, as you always do at Oshkosh, selling your books, the Vintage Flyer series. Where can folks go to look at your book and to and buy one?
Probably the best place to get one. I can't sell them on the field at Oshkosh, but probably the best place to get them is on eBay. I've always got them listed on eBay.
Okay, on eBay. And Vintage Flyers is what they search for. Anything else you can think about in the tidbit arena for AirVenture?
Should be a good year. A lot of interesting airplanes for those of us who are vintage airplanes fans. So I'm excited and looking forward to it.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
And this is Jay Montgomery. We are on the fly, and you are listening to EAA Radio AM 1210, 93.1 on the FM dial, and on the web at airventure.org. We'll be right back.